Well, it's been a long 24 hours for Boston sports fans.
I did not watch the game last night. Well, by the time this podcast comes out, is Boston out of the playoffs?
No, 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 no. They're down 3-2.
Okay, so they will be by the time this podcast comes
out. Man, it was a rageful night in the Selkoff household. I was wrangling, scaling text and paths and SVG, not getting anything working, and watching the Celtics self-collapse. So fortunately, I feel better after a good night's sleep. But yeah, that was hard to watch. Cool, man. So let's see here. We got some fun stuff to talk about today. Why don't we start really quick with what we just talked about with server components and date purity, because I think it's really interesting. So I'm just going to set the stage a little bit. I do a lot of work with like D3 visualizations or dates in a calendar, all that sort of stuff. If you've seen our videos, you've probably seen some of that. And there's this library like DataFNs, which lets you basically like easily get all the days in a week. So if you want to show the page and show like the current week, highlight the current day, render Sunday to Saturday, just like you would in a calendar. It's great for that. It has like each day of interval. It has like start of week that takes in a date function, a date object. And I love using that. And I've used it a bunch over the years, mostly in client components, which are now a thing, React components. And basically when you're kind of in this like building a chart, building a calendar, something that depends on the user's browser, you are able to use this without really thinking about it. And it all sort of just works. It's similar to how I did D3 charting, and with SVG, usually you're working with a coordinate plane and you need to know how many pixels you're working with, which again, you don't know until you're on the client. And you can set that as like the view box of the SVG and you're good to go. But the problem with both of those is like the folk and not having anything on the server. So the way we've been writing React apps for a while, we pre-render our client components on the server. That's SSR. And a lot of times for any sort of component that falls in this class of component, you just use an effect and don't render on the server because maybe you need use measure, and use measure gives you the bounding rect once it's on the screen, and that's going to return null for the initial render. So you don't run into any problems, or you're going to wait to render the client calendar and use new date. So server rendering sometimes exposes these kinds of issues. These are like hidden inputs to your components that you don't really think about, but kind of makes them impure. And we were working on this little dashboard for ourselves and kept running into this and kind of discovered some interesting things. But the thing I want to talk about today is how server components kind of fits into this puzzle. Now, when you render a chart or you render a component using data from a server, the server fetches it and then passes it to the client. So that data is coming from the server, like let's just say an array of objects or something like that. In that case, the chart should be a function of that data. And that way, there's no hidden inputs. The chart renders the same in any environment. We were working with a date object this morning, and what we realized with server components in the app directory in Next13 is if you try to get alignment between the server component rendering the current time, the client component pre-rendering the current time in Node with server-side rendering, and then the client rendering the current time once it hydrates on the client, it's very hard, it's very complicated to think about all of that. DataFNs has a companion time zone library that lets you do things like, what did you call it? Not coerce a date, but
express a date.
Express a date. You can give in a date. You can say, what is the version of that timestamp in New York? And so that's kind of one way to do it, because we want to render the chart in New York, regardless of where it's being rendered. And we kind of, through some experimentation, got all three of these versions to align. Then we tried something else. We tried creating the date at the time of the request in the server component and then passing it as a prop to a client component. And like instantly everything kind of just simplified. It just got easier. The client component no longer had a hidden input. The delay between the request time when the server component runs and news up a date, and when it's actually responded to and React hydrates and then does the same thing. Doesn't matter because there's a single source of truth, which is the date object that was created on the server in the server component. So when thinking about making something like a calendar or a clock that shows like the current minute or something, this is like a really, really cool solution because that single source of truth is going to be accurate. The response is going to happen within a few seconds. So it'll be the same day. You can highlight the same day in the calendar. And your client component just becomes like way simpler. And you don't have to think about the fact, for example, that on the client in the browser, new date always adopts the current time zone of the browser, which could obviously be different. So I just wanted to talk through that because I think kind of where we landed with this is like some of the work we were doing and trying to figure out a way to get the current time or the beginning of the week in New York, regardless of where this is being rendered. We're not using server components right now in Build UI, but if we were, a lot of that code would just go away.
Yeah. I think here the big issue is that you might have heard what you just said and say, hey, why do I need server components? Can't I just create the dates and like get server-side props and then pass them in as props to the components? And the answer there is no, because those components still have to render on the server. And
right.
then they render again on the client and rehydrate that server output. So I'm using the word like server and component way too much, but that's in like the pre-React server components. You render the component on the server, send it down to the client as HTML, and then rehydrate it on the client. In a React server component world, you just render the component on the server and you send down, it's basically its output. What do we say? We say like RSC payload. That's what we're
saying. Yeah, the payload.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're not trying to rehydrate that with a different environment that might have a different time zone and different date behavior. So it's nice, man. It's really simplified.
It's incredibly nice. It's incredibly nice. It doesn't get hydrated. You don't care about the environment that it's running in, that it's being rendered in. And it's really cool. Tying it back to some of the work I was doing, I just finished wrapping up like this responsive D3 chart. The motivation was wanting to get it server rendered, which was changing some of the dates. So we figured some of that out. And now the chart can render on the server, pre-render on the server, render on the client, so that you can use like frame of motion to like animate the path or radix or whatever to add interactivity. And it took me a while to figure out how to use the view box, but without pixel value. So you don't need to measure the thing. It can just responsively fill it up so that the initial render from the server is correct. But then after kind of this whole experiment this morning, you were kind of making the point like, well, if this was a server component, first of all, you wouldn't have needed to do the extra fancy stuff to make sure the hydrated version matched. And second, you don't even need to do the hydrated version at all, which is so cool because people who haven't used D3 directly with React. So kind of stepping back here, D3 and a lot of charting libraries are a lot often used in an effect because they have their own imperative APIs to do things like draw bars and draw paths. So when people first started using D3 with React, they would do something like, here's a chart component, use an effect or componented mount, right? And then call D3 select all, bind the data, and then insert the elements. That's using D3 to render. But the cool thing is that we can use React to render and D3 to compute. So if you use D3 only to compute and you use React to render, you get a much nicer experience. And it feels like you're writing a React component with P tags and divs, except you're using SVG tags and path tags and circle tags. And so if you use D3 in that way, you only use it for computing scales, computing path attributes, you're just rendering React elements. And so right now the chart doesn't have any interactivity. It's responsive and it uses media queries to like change its aspect ratio, but there's no interactivity. So all the code I wrote could just be in a server component and never hydrate at all and still be fully responsive, use container queries to change the labels when the chart gets small. So this is really cool. And then I want to add interactivity. This is why I like using D3. A lot of people ask me when I use D3, why not use like a charting library that makes it easier? And it's just because I don't like, I know D3 and it's kind of the lowest level tool for this sort of thing. If I want to animate a line, I don't have to look up any documentation because I'm just working with a JSX path element. So I animate it the same way I would animate a div. And so once you know how to do frame of motion to animate React and you're using D3, you know how to use frame of motion to animate SVGs that you're drawing with it. Same thing with interactivity. If I wanted to add a React Aria tooltip when I hover a button, I know how to do that because React Aria tells me. The fact that I'm rendering a circle with a date point, it's completely the same. So now you can do on hover, show the tooltip, whatever. So the next step that
can I just interject here? There's something amazing that the composition story gets more and more powerful the more of these tools that you know. So like you talk about doing frame of motion in React Aria, and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And now you're talking about also adding D3 in there, and it's like I'm like, I can't wait to see this. Like my mind is being blown just listening to you talk about using all these tools together.
Totally. And that's why I like choosing libraries that operate at the lowest level, because I'm using Tailwind to style the title in an H2, and I'm using Tailwind to style the text tags in the SVG chart. I'm using them with Tailwind container queries to change it from Monday to M when the chart gets small. And that's the same exact way I would use Tailwind to change any old HTML thing. React being the lowest level, whereas if I had a more monolithic charting library that is doing the rendering for me and I can specify something like, you know, X axis spacing or X gap, right? I want to use, you know, gap from Tailwind, or I want to use CSS grid to lay this out. I don't want to have to tell it the widths. I want to do it exactly the same way I do the rest of my HTML. So these libraries in particular have just nailed the boundaries with this stuff. And so it makes it so pleasant. The next step is to try to make parts of the SVG chart a client component, which is crazy to think about because again, I've been doing D3. D3 is kind of what got me into front-end JavaScript back in the day because I was into economics and they use a lot of data visualizations in economics. So I was wanting to make them with D3. And again, I have like this conference talk and these videos from 8 years ago where you just open up a chart and you're just all this imperative D3 code. And now it's just disentangled. There's no imperative code because React is rendering it and you're just doing pure calculations. So there's no reason why you can't go into a node. I just want to take the circle element that's rendering the dots and literally just render a client component instead, which is so crazy to think about.
And decorate it with like on mouse over or something?
Return a circle and it should pre-render. So the initial payload should have exactly the same HTML and then add an on hover that runs when it's hydrated and conditionally render like a tooltip or a popover, or change its color show, even just toggle a class on a nearby thing that shows the number or the date or something like that. Or when you hover over the line, you know, you show a tooltip that follows your mouse cursor and it shows like the total or something like that. There's so many ideas here. In EmberMap, we made a course where we had bar charts that corresponded to data in a table, and you could click on the bar chart and it would navigate the app. The bar charts would re-render with animation and the table would filter. So it's kind of like the dream of all this stuff just being feeling like it should feel no different to add like bar chart or line chart elements than it is to add a div or a p tag, have them be interactive. So pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool stuff. I'm excited. There's it's kind of like the pages stuff, the app directory stuff is like, it's like the Ember app we always wanted to write. You know what I mean? Because you're not locked out of anything, but it feels like that, you know? And so my brain already just is going to all these places that I would think about. You know, we were swiping on the fitness app on the iPhone yesterday in the office, and like you're going back and forth between days, right? You could make that tied to the URL, you know? And you could do the same thing, re-render the chart when the URL changes. It's all like one-way data flow starting from the server. So pretty cool to see all these pieces coming together. Just wanted to kind of share that. So
yeah, I just want to add one thing is that you talked about how you server render the chart and how you could have done it in an effect with like some imperative API. And I've seen a lot, like a lot of websites I go to, they seem to do that, right? Like the chart always, you get the initial paint and then the chart comes in later and it's usually fine. It's only like a couple, like a second at most. Dude, I have to say the chart that you made, it feels so rock solid. You hit Command R and you don't even see anything flat, like nothing changes. It's like, it's like if you went to an all text-based website and hit Command R, exactly what happens, you would think would happen. Exactly what happens there on that text-based page happens on the chart. And it just, I don't know, man, it just gives me the feeling of like solid software, you know?
Yeah, and it's I know it's exactly React. What you mean. And it's React, dude, I know. It feels like just when you're clicking around Wikipedia and you're not overwhelmed with anxiety of things popping in and out, you're using like a solid page navigation, but this happens to be rendering like this big awesome chart. And especially because it used to use an effect to render because it measured. And so now we know the difference, right? And so it just feels so much better. It's like you changed frameworks or something, but you didn't, right?
Yeah, but it's also not like if we were to like record it with QuickTime and time it, it wouldn't even be a full second. But there's just something about it that it just it feels rock solid.
Absolutely. I really like the discipline that both server rendering, SSR client components and server components imposes on you to think about these things, because now that they're an option and even that they're a default, you know, we used to complain a lot when we started working with React frameworks like Create Next App and Create React App. I guess added server-side rendering. Did they ever add server-side rendering?
I don't think they ever did.
Maybe there was another one we used, but Gatsby or something like that. Maybe it was Gatsby and then Next, where we're like complain, you know, it's easy to just be like running into errors that come from running your React components in Node. You're like, I'm a React developer. I don't want to think about this. I just want to wait until I render. But over time, as we've gotten better and the ecosystem's gotten better, I actually really like the discipline it imposes because of what you just said. Not only does it make the app feel better because it helps you realize that you are doing things on the client you actually don't need to be doing. It simplifies your code too, with like as in the date example, where you realize dealing with the date being rendered on the client with the browser in different time zones is not actually it's not actually needed. It's not actually an input to the output of the UI you're trying to build. So
it's interesting that that is something we would say is accidental complexity for needing to generate HTML from a React app.
And yep.
That gets moved away now. It just gets
sweeped under the rug. It also, you know, we had such a reaction to like default components in Next.js 13 being server components, because you're like, I can't just like create a new page and use state. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, yeah. But this is an argument on the counter of that, which is it's a lot easier to introduce incidental complexity. It's incidental to how you did it as opposed to essential, right?
Incidental.
It's not needed to actually generate the output, whereas you think it would be, right? So that's another point in the favor of the default being server components, which is really interesting. It has nothing to do with bundle sizes. It has nothing to do with even really like, I mean, I guess hydration is a bigger way to think about it. You kind of said something where when we were working on this little example, you were like, dude, if we had done your chart that you were working on in server components, like we wouldn't have had to deal with any of this, you know? And it's like, do you really need to rerun your code again on the client? Not if you don't have interactivity. And then you're like, wait, but you're not taking, like, you can take React pry it out of my cold dead hands. And you're like, wait, I'm not.
Yeah.
You're still writing React components. You're still, you know, using map and extracting little components and installing libraries that, it's awesome, you know?
It is. Also on the pages being default server components, I like them. And for a reason of usually the first thing you want to do when you enter, like you just take a URL, usually the first thing you want to do is load data. And being able to load data on the server is easier than on the client. So I do like that.
Totally.
I think that's another benefit of pages being server
components. Absolutely. And again, just tying it back to the date thing in particular, it was just fun seeing how you knew up a date or you create the date in all three places and it's like hard to get it to align. Then you realize this is more like fetching data from a database because, you know, there should be a single source of truth. So the server component can new it up and then pass it as a prop to the client component. And now the client component's always going to agree with it. And if it needs that interactivity, it can. And you made a comment that was interesting too. You said like when we pass the date to the client component and it just worked, you were like, you couldn't do this with like get server side props or with Remix.
Does Remix do anything loader pattern. To like serialize a date or do they tell you serialize it yourself?
I think you have to serialize it yourself. Okay. Is that what you were referring to? Like specifically the date object being serialized? Yep.
And I've hit this in get server side props.
Yes.
Where?
So they must be adding something. I know they were talking about JSONB or something, support for like a superset of data objects, but you can pass a date that you create on the server at the time of the request so you don't get the delay, you don't get a mismatch. Pass it to a client component as a prop and do console.dir in the component, in the client component. Once it rehydrates, you'll see a date object in JavaScript, which is crazy.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Undefined is a big one where I always make a mess because you can't pass like undefined over the boundary. So I always have this like, you know, middle name, question mark, null. And it's like, why?
Right.
If you looked at that code, you'd be like, why are you doing that? Like it just would be like undefined. So it'd be cool to test undefined in this situation because that would clean up a lot of my code.
Nice. Cool. I can talk more about the chart maybe next week. I'm pretty happy with it. I was trying to get it to do some things that I actually haven't seen like any other charting libraries do. Again, most charting libraries can be responsive and scale, but they have to wait to render. So the tricky part there was a combination of making it responsive, but also robust to server-side rendering in a way that doesn't like shrink the text as well or has a predetermined size. So maybe I can talk about that more next week.
Cool. Yeah.
Cool, man. What you been working on?
I've been doing a bunch of, we can just continue the theme of server components because I've been doing a bunch of server component work. And I got to say, I love it. You know, it is just, I actually wanted to like just kind of have a discussion with you where, you know, I've seen some like, not some negative feedback, but just some feedback that's like, I don't know, some things like, you know, React is changing too much. Up there, React goes again, just changing again. Talking about like rewriting your backend. Oh, I guess I have to rewrite my whole backend now. And so I just kind of wanted to talk through just a few situations, like how we would think of this. So I guess the first is like, you know, we used to have this saying, what was it, that JavaScript hype cycle and the JavaScript hype fatigue. Or it's just every, you know, 2 to 3 years, there's a new library or a new best practice and you got to feel like you have to relearn everything. And do React server components fall into this? And what's sort of your take there?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I think that people get this sort of feeling too quickly just because they let themselves get sucked into it. You know, we've been developers for long enough that we know if something's really good, it's going to be a good a year from now. So if it's relatively new, you really don't have to pay attention to it if you don't want to. If you're talking about working on your app and you're currently productive with your stack and all that, right? We didn't even get into React until, you know, late. And like, maybe you could argue we waited too long, but like we also didn't spend 3 years working on Angular Vue, which I, you know, don't regret at all. That was good to avoid that. Or using Redux. We never used Redux. You know what I mean? Because it not only is it about the hype cycle and how new something is, it's also about, does it solve a problem you have? So I think that's the second point I would make. First is like, just don't worry about people who are tweeting with flame emojis about the new greatest thing. Like, just scroll past it. It's fine. Find people you trust and keep up with them so you can keep your finger on the pulse. But don't worry about jumping on board. The second thing is the problems that you're having. So if we were doing Rails, you know, back when we were doing Rails and we had no problems with it, we'd still be using Rails. The problems we had when we were using Rails was wanting to add interactive features on the front end. And so we found Ember and started doing it there, and then eventually had problems with Ember and looked at React, and it solved a lot of the composition issues and just the feeling of writing all those components together a lot. It solved a lot of the pain points there. So server components are worth paying attention to because they are the result of like 3 or 4 years of work from the React team. So I would personally put them in a different category just based on that to kind of start off. Second, if I look at my projects or our consulting work where we did client-side data fetching, we had, while you can get those kind of apps to a point where they're really fun, and it's some of the most fun I've had developing, is using something like SWR that ships a shell to the client and is reactive. You focus a tab and it refreshes the data. You can animate between those states. It has a cache, so it's really fast once you start navigating around the app. Those are some of the most fun apps I've ever worked on before, and they result in some of the best user experiences. But there's no question that setting those things up to start has a lot of pain points. What is the off state when you load the app? You have to wait. You have to block on everything, right? And since you're fetching data on the client, you can't really do that. So then you have things that we do where not only is like that difficult to wire up effects that sequentially get the app in the correct state, you also have a need for, you know, server rendering and having an initial render that's meaningful, especially with a site like builddry.com, where we want to share links and have OG tags and things like that. That becomes important. So, you know, I think we did the client side data fetching and rendering model for a long time because it solved a lot of issues we had when we were working on Rails apps. And then the issues that it created because of a lack of knowledge of the server, that's why, you know, in this case, for us anyways, server components are really exciting, and why you say things like you say when you work on them, which is like, I just need data for the page. When you first load the app, that's like a very common thing to do. I don't have to code a loading state. Also, the things you say, like you just said about the chart, where you load the page, you have some fancy React thing going on, but it's already there when you load the page, and then you open, you know, even like Vercel dashboard. Vercel's great, and they're converting their dashboard over to server components. I can't wait, because when you load it up, it's like all over the place. When you load Twitter up, it's all over the place. Like, so many of these sites are just all QuickBooks. Like, they're just all over the place, and it just feels like you're this close to having an error that's going to force you to refresh the page. So for all those reasons, I think that's why we're more invested in server components. We're definitely going to be using them. We already are using them in some places. But so that's kind of how I think about it, you know. And I don't really think that it's a hype cycle. Of course, there's hype around it. Mm-hmm. And people are going to make videos and blog posts that say this changes everything forever. React just taught us all how to do. I remember like when GraphQL and Relay came out, there was all these like, React just told us all how to make websites and we didn't know forever, right? That's the kind of thing that we ignore, yeah. You know? It's worth paying attention to the technology, but we're not going to run out and use it. But this is part of React. It's such a core concern with the data fetching stuff. And for those reasons, I think I wouldn't consider it part of the hype cycle.
Cool. I've always considered hype cycles just like, oh, there's like a big wave that this thing is popular. I'm not necessarily saying it's like a negative.
Right.
But maybe it is. Maybe I'm just, you know.
I think I like to not think there's a hype cycle that is going alongside of technology development. And sometimes the development is like a dead end and the hype cycle is going alongside of it, in which case. And then sometimes it's a real like breakthrough, a real new innovation, and the hype cycle is also going alongside of it. I try to just ignore the hype cycle altogether and just look at the tech, look at people I trust, their opinions, and see if it's solving problems I have. So I try to not let myself get influenced by it, which again, maybe like hype is part of marketing, which is part of how people find out about things. So I'm not saying it's not important, but when it comes to like, am I going to go run out and use the thing? You know, it's more about my personal interests, my personal problems, the opinions of people I trust, rather than how popular this thing is on Twitter.
Yeah. Or just more like kind of the darker side of that, where you just get this feeling of, Oh man, I spent all this time learning this tech and now I have to relearn it. I'm starting from zero. This is so frustrating.
Yes. So that, and that's maybe why I have the negative connotation with hype cycle, because I see people do that. And again, I think this only comes from experience, but you know, you and I have worked long enough to know we're not going to jump into some, add some GitHub repository, some library that has 200 stars that was just released, even if it looks really good, because we have the experience to know that those things can bite you. And using a hype cycle as a proxy for adding new tech to your toolbox can really bite you, because if it's not going to be maintained, if it's not really solving the right problem or not at the right boundaries, then it can really come back to bite you, and you can open your app up a year later and it's going to be like, you're like, shit, you know, this is like totally wrong. And everything is in a Redux store and now I don't even need that because React has server components, right? So that, going back to talking about this stuff at the beginning, things like Tailwind, right? Things like React Aria and D3. D3 has been around for like 15 years or something. And it's not only that it's been around that long, it solves a specific problem with a very narrow boundary. You know, Tailwind is incredibly well maintained. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. React Aria is like used by Adobe. So those are some of the things that I consider, you know. And then React itself, obviously, if you're using React and they come out with something like Hooks, at this point I have enough trust in the React team to know that those things are very well considered and there's a good reason for using those things. So I'm going to be more inclined to use new React features earlier on than I would if someone tweets about how signals solve all the pain points I have with use effect, right? So I'm going to look at those just kind of casually, but server components are going to take much less time for me to adopt for those reasons. So, yeah. So I think if you're having FOMO or fatigue from the hype cycle, those are some things you can do, and just focus on your own stuff. There's always going to be a ton of things. There's people who use Haskell who tell us we're all doing it wrong. You know, I'm not worried about them.
That is true. The first time you hear that, you're like, what? And then now you're like, yeah, I've been hearing that for 15 years. So
yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah, I heard someone make a comment like, I built this entire app and it doesn't use any client components, something like that. It's all server generated and that's cool, but I saw Dan, or I forget, that there's a whole bunch of threads, but I think there was a comment that was like, you know, the goal isn't to not use any client components.
Yes. Yes.
Server components extend the client React model that we know
exactly about today.
And that made me think, it's like, yeah, it's not about, I think it's very easy to see a new piece of tech thinking about rewriting everything to use that, but you don't,
that's,
yeah, exactly. I saw that and it was almost like a calming statement. By the way, I'm in your boat. Like, I don't, you know, we're late to react. I just always remember we were late to React and we're perfectly fine. So
yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was a nice, it's not like a new model. This is it extends the client model, and then you can kind of work it in where you have problems. So for example, that resonated with me because I have the data fetching is a huge problem in my apps, huge problem.
And
being able to just query the database, write it just the first page or the first layout you enter. And that's it.
Yeah.
I don't,
you want to load data and navigate.
Yeah. Yeah. I just load, exactly. Load data and then render it. So,
yep. Dude, absolutely. That's the other reason why I think it's good to, new tech that talks about what it does, just because of the fact that it's new, people think it replaces the old. But if you are using the libraries with well-considered boundaries, and you always want to understand both the problems you're having and the problems the library was designed to solve, right? Are signals like, that's why when like Vue's reactive primitives and Signal people talk about why signals are performant, like why were they created? Because they can like surgically update the DOM and they don't need to like re-render everything. So if you look at them and they talk about like, isn't it crazy you're re-rendering your whole app just to update the count and a p tag, signals get like a reference to that and they can just update it and keep it in sync without, we don't need a virtual DOM anymore. This is like a huge reconciliation process that's part of rendering React that's totally unnecessary. And you're like, so from my perspective, like, that's kind of technologically interesting, but I don't have a problem with performance in my React apps. Actually the re-rendering model is great because of how it simplifies the code. And I don't have apps that have performance problems because of re-renders. There are a few times where the model breaks down with something like a mouse move event or an animation where you don't want to trigger re-render 60 frames a second. You use something like frame of motion to do that. And that's fine. You know, that's fine. And so I wouldn't want to, yeah. So that's an example of like understanding the problem that it's solving is really important and why it was created before jumping on board with it. With server components, people are saying server, it's easy. Maybe if you just casually look, maybe they could do a better job of explaining it, is that data fetching should be done on the server. You should do things on the server. You should do this, blah, blah, blah. And so now I have to convert everything to a server component. But going back to things like Tailwind, D3, Radix, they take specific parts of the problem space and draw small boundaries around it. So server components are a superset of a React app. A React app with server components is a superset of a React app with only client apps. That means we could take build UI right now, move it to the app directory, and it would work as a client rendered app, a client component only React app that still does server-side rendering of those client components to pre-render them so that we still have our OG tags, we still have the initial payload is HTML, all of that would work. So server components are additive. Then the question becomes, why do we use them now? And they solve different parts of the problem. So if you hover over the menu and you want to show it, you should not have any anxiety around like, oh, but this would be better as a server component. No, the purpose of React is not for you to make things for any other reason than the problem you're solving. And if the problem you're solving is fetching data when you load a page, well, you never really had a good answer for that in just React, because React always needed a frame on every render. Therefore, when the first and components would never async, they could never block on things. So you'd have to render loading state or use something like get server side props to pause the rendering. So that is the part that server components replaces. It's get server side props plus a client component is now just a server component. And not only is it a server component, but it's part of the React API and the architecture, meaning you can now down npm install a Stripe component that is a server component, and you don't have to call Stripe code and get server side props. It basically gets rid of get server side props. So if you're using get server side props, which we do, now you can replace that part of your components with React components. And it's better in a lot of ways. It makes the code better and you don't have to hydrate, but it's not about performance. It's not about bundle size. It's just about having a more composable way to pull that off. And then you have your Radix dropdown menu in our header, and that's just a React component, and it stays a React component. And so it's two different problems that are being solved by server components and client components. So the goal is not to eliminate client components. The goal is to have a primitive that's better suited for the problems we were using client components before that were hard to use client components for.
Awesome. From my experience, once I was able to move all the data fetching to the server components, the typical React client components that we write have been so much more enjoyable to work with. Dude, use effect is actually awesome, because I'm only using effects to do things that like you would think to do in an effect, like timers
that are going to have that are going to that are going to change on the client.
Yeah, that's like I think of it. It's like syncing something external to this component.
Right.
So it's kicking off a timer, you know, things like
that. Right.
I don't think of it as like, oh man, I'm like loading some getting off state thing, and then and the callback setting state is initializing false. All that just disappears. So it's like, oh yeah, use effect. Oh yeah, I need an effect for this. I need an effect to create a timer. It's not that bad. So
or like I've done that with measure, right? It's like when I'm doing what did I last use measure for? What was like my last few videos? Maybe it was the doc, you know? Mm-hmm. Like the doc is an example, the macOS doc that like I rebuilt and shot in a video. That's a client component because it responds to the user's mouse. There's no question about whether that should be a server component or not, right? Yep. Because you want to animate it when you mouse over it. What I just described is a client experience, right? Whereas fetching data from a database and rendering it on a table is not. Adding something like use measure to this is like, it feels great, just like you said. Adding use effects to try to coordinate data fetching and client states that are based on like database driven does not. So talk more a little bit about like the specifics of what you've been doing. I'm just curious, like with the server components in your app.
Yeah, so I have an app that like, I think it was like the week that Next 13 came out. I was like, yeah, I was using, this app was a client-side React app that, it was an app that I used to learn GraphQL and Apollo. And I just made such a mess with the Apollo cache. And it was, I had a huge pain point with loading data and validating the cache. And so this was my, okay, this app worked well to learn Apollo. This app is going to work well to learn server components.
Nice.
This poor app.
What's the app?
This poor app that I put over. It's like the user, it's a user management app that we use for like, it's basically an app that wraps Firebase's admin API. So I can see all the users. I can, you know, just search users. It wires up our Hasura backend. We use Hasura. So it automatically installs like auth webhooks for Hasura. There's a bunch of, the reason I created this app in the first place was I wanted to do a weekend project and I spent all weekend setting up a bunch of services and wiring them together. And I remember Sunday night, I did not work on any of the project. So I created this app to just bootstrap
new little
projects for me. Yeah, new apps, exactly.
Yep.
So this was my Learn Server Component app and moved all the data fetching to server components, which has been great. Keeping, you know,
I mean, are the PRs just like ridiculous? Like you just get rid of Apollo?
Do you think I do PRs on this
app? I mean, you know what I mean? Yes. The commits, like where it's just like,
oh,
you're just subtracting all of this data fetching stuff and you're just like awaiting a call and like to GraphQL in the server component.
There's one that was, you know, it's like embarrassing when you see it, but I had, I fetch a whole bunch of data. You can almost think of this like, I think the best analogy is like Trello, where you're fetching like the board, swim lanes, and then cards you can drag between mm-hmm. swim lanes. And I'm fetching all that with GraphQL, which GraphQL makes great to fetch. And I'm putting it in the Apollo cache. And then when you drag a card from one swim lane to the other, that's like an update on that card. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing this with like user stuff. You can like change a user's role and move them between mm-hmm. buckets. So it's mm-hmm. The UI, the Trello UI kind of works well for this. But
right.
When you move the user's role to a new bucket, to a new lane, and you save it and you get confirmation from the back end, you now have to go into like the Apollo cache and find that giant GraphQL query that you initially used to like fetch the page and surgically update. Okay, I removed the user out of this lane and I put them over here. And it's a lot of code. It was just a lot of code. Mm-hmm. And I removed all that. And I do the update and then I just call router.refresh and it just reloads a page. So it was like this, I don't know, 150 line
of like gnarly stuff.
Apollo cache stuff that's, you know, it's also spread across multiple files into like literally just a refresh, open parenthesis, close parenthesis, semicolon. And I saw that and I was like, yeah, this feels a lot better.
That's cool, man.
On that app, there's another point is I've heard people say, you know, look, I don't want to, now that there's server components, does this mean I have to rewrite my entire backend? And I don't want to use JavaScript to rewrite my backend. Well, that app that I'm talking about, that's a Hasura app, GraphQL app. And the first thing I did was just move the data fetching to a server component, but I still fetch it using the Hasura APIs. So right. They just moved out of the Apollo.
It cleans up the front end. It's like you have a back end for a front end effectively. That doesn't have to become server components. It's the client app, the consumer app that gets to use server components to fetch the data from the API service. And that is what cleaned up all of that code and reduces the states massively.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the reaction I had. I was like, oh, these server components are more like a BFF, back end for front end. That's mm-hmm. what we call it. Yeah. So it's there's something nice about I'm not when I'm fetching data on the client, I need a whole bunch of stuff. I need like auth and I need API keys and all this stuff. When I'm fetching data in a server,
a data fetching library like SWR or Apollo.
When I'm fetching data in a server component, I'm in like a privileged environment. I can usually connect directly to the database. Now, there's still going to be like some layer of auth because you don't want your server components to just pull out any data and render that data for anyone. But there's just something really nice about being in that sort of privileged environment.
Right.
But the point I want to make here is I didn't have to rewrite my backend. I just, my first step was to move the data fetching code. And I might like, you know, one of the reasons we used Asura was to make getting data to client apps easier.
Right.
And maybe if that problem just sort of goes away because we have server components, we will start to explore other things. But I didn't feel the need for,
because
of server components, I need to rewrite this all using like the latest Node.js ORM.
That's great. That's great. If we were working on Ember Map and we had our Rails API and then we used Ember Data to fetch it in the client and it syncs it and it has all this logic and you can cache update and peek inside the store. This is the part that, that React Server Components can solve first, is removing all that complexity from the client, removing the intermediate states where you're loading data and do it in the server component. But the Rails API is still there. So that's the way to think about it, is the data fetching code that's in your client app. Once your React app hydrates, what code is concerned with data fetching and loading and error states there? That's the stuff you can pull out, put in server components. It should simplify it because you have async await, because you're in a privileged environment, for all those reasons. Massively simplify it. And you can refresh the segments very easily so you don't have to like surgically update the cache. I made this video where I never use Apollo, but I use SWR and had the same issues. And we came from Ember, where Ember Data had also a cache that you had to sometimes manipulate. It almost felt like you're writing two code paths because you have to be able to load this from the server. You have to be able to do it after mutation on the client. And I did this thing with SWR where you can refresh live queries after mutation. So you don't have to do that thing where you peek in the cache and surgically find it. You just kind of blow it away. And it's cool that this is basically that and you have to write any code for it. You just, you already have it. Like the server components just refresh and it's just like overwrite. Let's just overwrite and re-render. They said this thing on Twitter about how server components bring the one-way data flow and always re-render every time. So everything's updated to the server. And that's kind of like, you're kind of demonstrating that with this story, right?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
It's pretty neat. You just mutate. The framework and tooling knows you're mutating. It's the same as React knowing that you called set state. So that triggers a re-render. But now a mutation triggers a re-render. You're calling router.refresh imperatively. But in the future, there's an actions API they're talking about, which is effectively like set state on the server. And that's just going to trigger revalidation of all the live segments. It's the same thing as calling set state and revalidating all rendered components.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
On that, just like just with like the alpha stuff, I've seen a few demos where folks are having actions or like even API routes that will render a small chunk of like a React server component.
Yeah, or payload. React like return a RSC payload or something.
Yep, and then they set that in state, and so that's a way you can have the server just kind of like after some action fill in a hole on the screen somewhere. So.
I have that's weird. I'm not going to be doing that.
I know you're not.
but it is fun. They are going to at some point have I think an API for rendering a server component conditionally based on some client side interaction that changes the app state. That is not a navigation, because right now basically navigations are the only way that you can change the server component tree. But I'm really looking forward to that, because one thing that I've wanted to build for a long time with server components, ever since I heard about them, was the Twitter timeline where you hover an avatar and then it pulls up a modal and shows the data. It's the kind of thing you wouldn't want to pre-render because you're scrolling a timeline. There's hundreds of users. So now, boom, you've broken the paradigm. You can use the server component to fetch the timeline data, but now you're in the client. This is a client interaction. So now we have to have some data fetching layer on the client. I'd really love to not have to do that, to be able to on hover, render a modal, wrap it inside, wrap a server component in a modal, and be able to, like you said, it's like you set state. I mean, I guess you could do that today, right? You'd set state, you get that JSX output, you're using a server component to fetch the avatar data for a given username. but then you're using a client component to render it in a modal.
Yeah. I'm guessing what you're saying without the step of like doing the fetch request and then setting the state, there'll be some nice API. But it has been fun to see the demos.
The hackers.
Yeah. And just say like, you know, at the end of the day, if this is how it's implemented, it's nice to be able to see this and play with it. But yeah.
That's cool.
Toy apps.
Awesome.
For me.
Cool, man. Yeah, absolutely. Very cool. I'm excited to wrap up the Tailwind and Remix stuff that I've been working on for Build UI so I can get my hands dirty with the server components.
Sweet.
So awesome. I think that's a good place to wrap it.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. You've got a second React server component video coming to the Build UI series. We'll definitely make that free for a week when it comes out. Mm-hmm. And that should be out by the time this podcast is published. So if you're hearing this and you want to check out Ryan's working on a React server components, kind of intro to data fetching and React server components series and Build UI, we'll have two episodes up. You'll be able to watch both of them. So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I guess we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.